Next item on the agenda is item number 5, Barry Hellman, docket number 071893. Mr. McGinnis.
This is a commission review of the November 14th, 2007 decision by the Norfolk Wetland Board to approve the installation and backfilling of 40 linear feet of replacement bulkhead adjacent to Mr. Barry Hellman's property situated along a cove off the North Branch of the Lafayette River in the city of Norfolk. This is the first slide of the staff presentation that was made to the board. Before I get into that, though, let me just go over a little bit of information. There was an existing deteriorated timber bulkhead with a concrete cap along this property. And the proposed project included the replacement of that bulkhead within the same alignment. Though the new bulkhead was proposed to be installed at a higher elevations that would require the backfilling of the new bulkhead, which would result in the filling of vegetated wetlands within the jurisdiction of the Norfolk Wetland Board. The commission review in this case is being undertaken in accordance with the provisions of Section 20.2.13.10 and Section 20.2.13.11A2 of the Code of Virginia. Subject property is located in this general vicinity here in the city of Norfolk, again off of the North Branch of the Lafayette River. It's actually in a man-made cove. This is an aerial shot, an oblique aerial. And another one here. This is Mr. Hellman's home. Unfortunately, the property lines are somewhat skewed on this because of the angle of the photo, but his property line, this is the fence line here, and it runs approximately down to this point here, follows the bulkhead here around to a point roughly where this tree is. The Norfolk Wetland Board held a public hearing on Mr. Hellman's application on November 14, 2007. Mr. Hellman was not present at the hearing, but was represented by his agent contractor, Flint Construction Company. City staff did provide a presentation of the proposed project, which includes these slides here, which I'll show you, a reading of the project's VIMS report, as well as their own staff assessment. Virginia Institute of Marine Science Shoreline Permit Application Report, dated November 7, 2007, stated the impacts from the proposed project have been minimized to the extent possible given the site conditions. VIMS indicated, however, that as proposed, the project would result in the loss of 10 square feet of vegetated tidal wetlands. Although city staff does not typically provide a recommendation to the board for either approval or denial, they do recommend special conditions as well as recommendations about things that should at least be considered by the board. And in this case, they did state that if the board were to approve the project and determine that mitigation for the impacted wetlands were necessary, that in their opinion, the assessment of in-lieu mitigation fees would provide a superior benefit over on-site mitigation, which in their opinion would provide little lasting benefit, valuable benefit in this particular case. Let me go through a few more of these slides here. These are some ground shots, and these stakes here with the blue marking are actually the upper limit of the board's jurisdiction, and I believe what VIMS had actually found to be vegetated wetlands were actually salt bush that were found in this area between the existing bulkhead and that area. This is approximately where the property line comes down in, where this blue stake is. Again, this is his house, and the property goes back this way. And you can see the shape of the timber bulkhead here. It is starting to have holes in it and certainly needs to be replaced. Just another shot there. At the conclusion of the hearing, the board voted unanimously to approve the project as proposed, but chose not to require mitigation for the 10 square feet of vegetated wetlands that they had permitted to be impacted. Although the board stated that compensation would not be required, they did not discuss why they felt wetland compensation, either through replacement or the payment of an appropriate in-lieu fee, was not warranted in this case. Staff would like to point out that the Commission's wetland mitigation compensation policy encourages the compensation of all permitted tidal wetland losses. This regulation states that if Virginia is to meet its Chesapeake 2000 commitment to achieve a no-net loss of tidal wetlands, wetland losses permitted through the Tidal Wetland Regulatory Program, which is administered by either local wetland boards or often by the Commission, and must be replaced no matter how small. And that's the language that you all approved back in that change almost 2 years ago. Just go through the rest of our slides here before we get into the staff recommendation. This is a copy of the plan view from the project drawings, and you can see in here the yellow area highlighted by the city staff approximates the impact area here. And this is just a standard cross section that they've shown here that is approximately 10 square feet of existing wetlands. In this case, the Norfolk Wetland Board approved a project with impacts of tidal wetlands that certainly appears to have been necessary as well as unavoidable. However, in staff's opinion, the board's decision not to require compensation for the loss of vegetated tidal wetlands was not in keeping with the intent of the Commission's wetland mitigation compensation policy. Therefore, it appears the board erred in its decision by choosing to permit the loss of vegetated wetlands without any compensation for those losses. Although the board may have considered the permitted loss of 10 square feet of vegetated tidal wetlands to be de minimis, we believe that the Commission's wetland mitigation compensation policy is clear that all permitted losses must be compensated for. In this case, using the board's approved in-lieu fee structure at $12 per square foot, the additional cost the applicant would have been $120. In light of the foregoing and in accordance with Section 28.2.13.13.1 of the Code of Virginia, staff recommends that the Commission remand this matter to the board for rehearing and that they be directed to require replacement or compensation for the permitted loss of vegetated wetlands in keeping with the provisions of the Commission's wetland mitigation and compensation policy. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. McGinnis from the Commission?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one question. Your concern here is a policy concern, I assume.
Yes, it's a policy concern. I realize that it's only 10 square feet we're talking about, and I think Norfolk's shown a history of doing a very good job of requiring mitigation on projects that have significant impacts. I think in this case they've chosen that the impacts here were small enough that they didn't feel it was warranted. I think the argument that we make is the no-net loss to tidal wetlands that the state has committed to, that regardless if it's 1 square foot or 1,000 square feet, that the board should be looking at requiring compensation in some fashion.
Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you, Mr. McGinnis. Wetlands Board Representative. Good morning, sir.
Thank you. My name is Kevin DuBois. I'm staff to the Norfolk Wetlands Board.
Hi, Kevin. Do you solemnly swear the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, except to God?
I do.
Thank you. Proceed, please, sir.
I just wanted to address two items in the staff evaluation. The first is that there was no discussion by the board before rendering their decision, specifically with the issues that Mr. McGinnis raised. The first is that the staff provides the local wetlands board with their staff evaluation of the project a week prior to the hearing. So the recommendation that the staff made, or the evaluation that the staff made during the hearing, was in a document form and presented to the board members a week prior. So they could they had the opportunity to review that assessment and ask questions of staff and consider that assessment for a week prior to the hearing. It wasn't presented just at the hearing. The second is that, as you all know, the hearings, especially the longer hearings, call for brevity where impacts are low or insignificant. And as Mr. McGinnis said, the staff has a very clear track record where significant impacts are involved of reading the guidelines and the standards into the record. So I think that this is not a case where the staff or the board ignored items of procedure to lay that foundation for their decision making. And the last is that the staff trust the board's awareness of the law and in their private deliberations, so we don't make them explicitly go on the record with every thought process they have before decision making. I think that's probably generally the case throughout the Commonwealth. The second issue that I wanted to address was the no net loss policy question. Norfolk is a leader in the adoption, design, and implementation of both private and public living shoreline projects, and as a result, we're actually achieving a net increase in wetlands in the city of Norfolk through these living shoreline projects. As just an example of that, the NOAA Wetland Restoration Center just asked if they could use a Norfolk design to take over to the Eastern Shore and use it as a guide for the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Nature Conservancy. They're actually adopting our design to do projects on the Eastern Shore that, again, increase wetlands in those areas. And as Ben pointed out also, on the larger projects, the city always requires mitigation, and we've been strong advocates of the VMRC mitigation policy for projects with significant losses of wetlands. In this case, it was considered insignificant by the board, and they ruled no mitigation was required.
Is this a situation where this may have been late in the day with a long agenda?
No, it wasn't.
Okay. When you mentioned, you know, sometimes brevity and necessity, I was wondering maybe if it was something that...
No, it wasn't. Maybe. It's just, no, there was actually a light agenda that day. I'm just, what I was trying to say is that we're trained to be brief, and where brevity is required and be explicit where the record needs to be full and complete, and in this case the record was brief. We felt it didn't need a whole lot of discussion.
I guess to cut to the chase, was the actual issue of the mitigation brought up, discussed, and a determination made that it wasn't necessary because it was de minimis in nature?
It was, and if you saw the record, in my presentation to the board, I specifically pointed out the need that the board should consider mitigation if it was appropriate, and the board went to decide on the issue, and the first motion did not include any consideration of the mitigation. I actually stopped the board at that point, reminded them of their responsibility to consider mitigation, and the motion was amended to specifically say that no mitigation was required in this case.
I saw that. I just want to make sure we got it on the record.
Yes,
here,
sir.
As well.
Thank you very much.
Further questions? Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a follow-up question. In terms of your recommendations to the board, I noticed that you indicated, I guess, in the record that the board needed to consider whether or not mitigation was required. Are you using any sort of standard for, I guess, filtering projects and saying if there are impacts below a certain threshold, you're not telling the board to include or recommending specifically that they include mitigation, but just that they consider it? In other words, are you considering some sort of threshold in your recommendations, and at below which you're not really telling the board that staff is recommending mitigation?
Well, the way we approach the staff's role is, as Ben indicated, Mr. McGinnis indicated, we don't make recommendations to the board. What we try to do is a staff assessment, very similar to what VIMS does. We look at the project and we make an assessment whether or not it's consistent with the state law. And so when we give an assessment, that's how it's couched. And if you saw on the record, we say, we feel the project meets the standards and guidelines in the law, and here are the things that you should consider. In every case, the board considers mitigation. And I can tell you, honestly, since the board adopted the guidelines, I think, other than this case, the board has in every other opportunity required mitigation. We've never had a project with such a de minimis impact before the board, and I think in this case, and I'll be honest with you, when I went to the site and you saw the photographs of the site, a casual observer wouldn't even say there were wetlands there. I think there were two or three individual salt bushes. I required that the applicant provide a survey to see whether or not it was in the board's jurisdiction, the 1.5 times the mean time range. They did that. And I'll be honest with you, the applicant was hopping mad that they even had to go to the board for a permit. But we said, we don't make the rules. It's vegetation, one of the 37 species within the range. And so it has to go before the board. But we didn't feel that these were wetlands of primary ecological significance, again, as the law states. And that's exactly why we said on-site mitigation would provide little benefit because of its landscape position, the cutoff of the connection to the water body because it's behind a bulkhead. We felt it just wasn't significant.
Further question, Mr. Fox. I'm sorry. Mr. Fox.
I think that the record shows, I think the documents that Ben put on the wall showed that there was no question there were wetlands there. The VIMS report said there were wetlands there. There was no argument about the fact that there were wetlands. And I was impressed with the way the staff presented in the proceedings here, I was impressed with the way the staff made his presentation to the board, mentioned the wetlands were there, mentioned that there was a possible need for mitigation. The motion was made, and then there was a clarification of, do you mean to include the mitigation or not? And so it seemed to me that everybody thought about the correct issues, but the final analysis, they voted incorrectly, because it seemed to me the law is very clear that there's to be no net loss of wetlands, and that the mitigation method in this case was also very clear that it should have been a in lieu payment instead of any mitigation on the land. And I just wonder, given the wonderful record of Norfolk in the past, I wonder just how this slipped by and why in the world it has to come before us today. And it looks like we've already spent 16 minutes on it on a very, very long agenda, and I'm not very happy about that.
You want to respond?
We have one other presenter. Our city attorney, I think, would like to add to that discussion. So.
Sure.
Thank you, members of the commission. My name is Adam Melita. I'm a deputy city attorney with the city of Norfolk. At the risk of spending even more time on this issue, I do want to ask for about 4 or 5 minutes of your time to clarify some of those legal questions that Mr. Fox has raised. First, I'd like to note at the outset that the written recommendation of Habitat Management and the comments of Mr. McGinnis confirm that this item is being brought to you under 28.2-1313, subsection 1. And that is significant to me because that section of the Virginia Code authorizes this commission to modify, remand, or reverse the decision of the Norfolk Wetlands Board if that Wetlands Board has failed to fulfill its responsibilities under the Wetlands Zoning Ordinance. What's notable is that staff is not recommending a remand based on 1313 subsection 2. And I think that's notable because that's the subsection that they would have asked for your review if they felt that the Norfolk Wetlands Board made a decision that was unsupported by the evidence on the record considered as a whole. So given what we have in writing, what the comments are here this morning, and the logic of the staff's position, I believe we're here simply on the narrow question of whether or not the law requires every square foot of loss or destruction of wetlands to be compensated. And I say that there's a logic in that position because it does. If it is true that the law requires every square foot to be compensated, it doesn't matter how long Norfolk would have spent discussing whether or not mitigation was appropriate. If they had spent an hour on it and they have no discretion to waive compensation, then it wouldn't have mattered. And so if compensation is required in every case, the fact that it was not discussed would be irrelevant. But the ultimate question is the question that Mr. Fox raised, and that is, does the law require, and is it clear that the law requires that every square foot of destroyed wetland be compensated? And citing five separate sections of Virginia law, I believe the answer is no. There are three specific Virginia Administrative Code provisions that all discuss the discretionary nature of requiring compensation. For Virginia Administrative Code 20-390-50, which defines the supplemental guidelines, opens with the statement, if compensation is required, then the following guidelines should be given due consideration and, if appropriate, may be included as conditions of the permit. You've got all kinds of qualifiers there. You've got should give consideration, if appropriate, and may be included. Nothing there requires compensation. At 4 Virginia Administrative Code 20-390-20, and this is the section that Mr. McGinnis cited for the language that says that wetland losses permitted through tidal wetland regulatory program, no matter how small, must be replaced. At paragraph 2 of that regulation, it says that the commission, through this policy, intends to encourage, again, where appropriate, the compensation of all permitted tidal wetland losses. The language is always qualified as encouragement or where appropriate. There's nothing mandatory. The use of the word shall is not present in these regulations. And these are regulations that the violations of these regulations do amount to criminal sanctions. Throughout Chapter 28.2 of the Virginia Code, any order, rule, or regulation of this commission is punishable as a crime. But these are guidelines. These are not the law. These are guideposts that help the Wetlands Board focus their questions. They're not mandates that bind their discretion. And so ultimately what we have to do is we have to look at the Virginia Code. And 28.2-1308 is the critical section here because it says that the following standards shall apply to the use and development of wetlands and shall be considered in the determination of whether any permit should be granted or denied. And then Section B says that the guidelines promulgated by this commission shall be considered when you're applying these standards. So again, the language is consistent throughout the regulations and throughout the language the General Assembly has adopted that what the Norfolk Wetlands Board is required to do is to consider mitigation. And we believe the record indicates that they did consider mitigation. If it has no discretion in that department, if it is required to require compensation or mitigation, A, the law would have said that, and B, all of this other language that we see, where appropriate, if necessary, and shall be considered, all of that language would be superfluous. All of that language that tends to give discretion to the decision-making body does no work if there is no discretion. If the Norfolk Wetlands Board is mechanically required to require a one-for-one mitigation in every single application, then there's no point in affording it the discretion that the General Assembly and the regulations in the Virginia Administrative Code require. For that reason, we believe that the record indicates that the appropriate discretion was exercised and the decision should be allowed to stand.
Thank you. Any questions of counsel? Counselor, I believe where we are is caught between what's common sense, what's the policy of this commission, and what's the best way to find a midpoint? I believe your argument is valid, but then again, where do you draw the line? If you've got discretion, where do you begin to say, and I'm speaking hypothetically at this juncture, well, where do we start saying no mitigation is required, and where's the threshold? I think what staff was doing, matter of fact, I'm certain staff was sending a message that this commission would like to have mitigation in every circumstance. For $120 at this juncture for 10 square feet of wetlands, I'm not so sure that it's a prudent use of taxpayers' dollars from an expenditure perspective, not from a principal perspective, but from a monetary use of governmental funds to send it back over that amount of money. But at the same time, it is important to protect our wetlands, and that's what I think staff was doing. There's no doubt that the city of Norfolk has had an exemplary track record as far as the wetlands are concerned, based on what I've seen being around here for 15 years. So with that, I'll place it before the commission for action. We have to do something with it.
I make a motion.
Mr. McCluskey?
That the Hillman case, 071893, that the commission uphold the Norfolk Wetlands Board decision.
Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second it.
Second by Mr. Holland. Further discussion?
Mr.
Robbins had his hand up first, and then I'll go to my right. Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up, I appreciate staff bringing this to our attention. However, I think based on the testimony we've heard, I don't think there's any question that the city of Norfolk is fully committed to the no wetlands loss policy on a broad level. And I appreciate the testimony we heard from their staff today. And I'm gonna support the motion. I think the board did take it into consideration. I might have reached a different conclusion, but I think they did consider it, and I agree with the motion that's been made.
Someone to my right, Mr. Schick.
There's no doubt that the mitigation and compensation policy is the cornerstone of habitat management's no net loss policy to protect wetlands. But we are having these types of things come before us. We had it last month, the month before last. Significant wetlands, functional wetlands, productive wetlands, you know, and I guess what we are saying is maybe, and I don't know if this is what we're saying, anybody who has waterfront property has an obligation to protect wetlands. If it is non-productive or non-functional or non-significant wetlands, they still have maybe an obligation to help out in compensation, even if it is 10%. And to the uneducated or casual observer, it doesn't look like wetlands. If this is our policy, I guess we need to maybe even make it a little clearer. If we do want to take the policy that significant, non-significant wetlands or non-functional wetlands are not something that somebody has to replace, then we have to make that clear. In this case, I can see where, the staff had an obligation to bring it to our attention. VIMS has an obligation to give us the percentage, and we're going to have to make some decisions in the future. So.
Thank you. Further? Mr. Tankard?
The only thing I'd like to remind the staff is, and ourselves and maybe the audience, is I thank the staff for bringing this to our attention. I mean, we have to realize the bay is almost dead. I think Chesapeake Bay Foundation gave it a horrible rating here recently. And to make the bay somewhat healthy to sustain life for the fish we eat and enjoy catching and all the other creatures, we've got to work on protecting our wetlands. And so I don't take it lightly, and I'm very conflicted about the common sense nature of what we need to do. But at the same time, the importance of having a living Chesapeake Bay is, I think, paramount for all Virginians, and I don't think we should do anything at any time to decrease our determined focus to increase the health of the Chesapeake Bay.
Thank you. Further comment? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed?
No.
Aye. Motion carries 2 dissenters. Kathy, you got that? Mr. Tankard and Mr. Fox voted no. Thank you all very much. Next item on the agenda is Richard J. Zimmer, item 07-2051. Mr. Nykirk, good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Zimmer is requesting authorization to remove an existing pier and construct a new private non-commercial pier. Mm-hmm.